Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Young Women Transform podcast. I'm Heather Risley with USAID's Office of Education.
And I'm Lindsay Wolf with Youth Power Learning.
In this episode, we're going to be talking about program design. It's going to cover a lot of different areas. We're going to dig in both to the technical side of program design and talk specifically with Daniel, the program manager here, about some of the needs assessment work they've done, how they're evaluating their program, what impact looks like. But we're also going to discuss in more detail what the experience was like for this small young organization to be a grantee with USAID funds, which can be challenging for small organizations to manage. But from listening to Safe Plan staff talk about their experience, I know they've learned a lot about accounting, record keeping, and a lot more. Now I'm going to turn it over to Lindsay and her interview with Daniel, Safe Plan Uganda's programs manager. They're going to talk in detail about Safe Plan's Budongo Women's Bee Enterprise Program, or BUOBE.
Daniel, would you be able to walk us through the process of how BUOBE provides the hives to the community and then buys the honey back from them? What are all of these steps exactly?
The way the program works is that the enterprise gives the hives to the community. The community keeps the bees, they raise the honey and sell back to the enterprise, so that the enterprise takes some percentage to recover the cost of the hive, then the other percentage to the person who has brought the honey. So by so doing that, the hive has a product life of 3 to 5 years. The person continues to reap from that very hive. So if the person, maybe the income increases, can so wish to buy another one. So we expand from that starting point. So the BUOBE, maybe something that we need to again highlight is that the tools we got was the basis of that project. To make beehives, like now they are making the community. We have trained the young people. They are helping us here to make some parts of the hive. So we make from here, we go and complete from there. So we are trying to create a way of how do we have the hives to the community. But when it is formalized and we are really fully funded, we shall have a production, well-established production system for hives, where we are planning to produce in hundreds or thousands, and then we can expand to other districts, other communities, and so on. But that is the model, that have it to the community, they keep the honey and sell it back to you so that we can have more honey. They will be earning income.
And who is the target market for these products that they're selling?
Now, we initially started with the community. First target beneficiaries, who will also help us do the research, because when that product comes out, we are going to do one of the two things: either subsidize the price or give them for free and they use. So after 3 to 6 months, we would have known how the product performs, then it can push the market. So once the product has been fully developed, we plan to register with the authorities, National Drugs Authority and other relevant authorities, so that the product is fully recognized. Then we can move out to outside market across the district through the National Drug Authority. And in 5-10 years, maybe we can cross the borders, Kenya, Southern Sudan, Democratic Republic of Congo, and so on. So we are starting here, and we hope we get there.
So BUOBE is a cooperative model. Could you tell us more about that and the products that they're producing?
The cooperative model gives the power to the members to have a say, to control how they want to be managed and how they will be producing their things and how they will be benefiting. Then the beauty about that is that according to the original design, let alone the funds, is that if this model can really be developed so well, there can be a unit that these women in the village can also be benefiting from national social security support, because if you are poor, you are not earning anything. If you get old, that is the end of you. But if we have a system that they support by bringing the honey. We give them some little money. Some money is saved. They have social security fund. They can also benefit in future. This unit can also help them to maybe borrow school fees to pay for their children and then address some of the emergency they would be facing. So the business, the model is that community should get together to produce something that will give them money, and that money, the marketing of the product should be really formalized. That's why we are doing training. We are very hopeful we may get funding in future and support them with more boxes. We want to improve the quality of the production so that we can have good market. We are aspiring to be really a major, well-organized social enterprise across East Africa, if God blesses our plan.
And how are you adding value to the honey that the women are producing?
Yeah, initially, we would just get honey and pack and sell. But it is coming with a challenge of out of season and even the income we get. So it's just get the honey, pack and sell. There is little control on the product we take out. So we are trying to improve the chain by having high-value product like the honey syrup. We are also planning to integrate other products like the lip balms, maybe jelly, so that there is more earning in the honey value chain. It doesn't end with the producer. For us, our work is take them the box, they produce the honey, they bring back. By so doing that, we think they'll be more engaged, there'll be more income, there'll be more jobs for them, and life may get better for them.
And you're training them to make those value-add products.
Yes, yes. The skills must be with them because they are the target beneficiaries. Want a village-based enterprise where we can easily recruit people from the village because they have a lower competitive advantage to the other because of their level of education, exposure, and so on. So this is an opportunity we prefer nearer to them in the community they live in so that they see how this thing can change their life.
We're going to take a quick pause here. Lindsay and Daniel have covered a lot of ground on the actual business model that Buobe is based on. I think in a small-scale project like this one, a cooperative model works really well. It gives community members more control over the process and builds in sustainability. The idea of adding value to the honey value chain is also very forward-thinking. Their plan for developing additional products out of the honey that can sustain them through the off-season could become a huge help to people, particularly women who are living on so little each day. Okay, here's Lindsay and Daniel again, talking about SafePlan's use of needs assessments and evaluations.
You utilized a needs assessment for your training design. Can you tell us more about that and how that informed the training that you provided?
When we go straight specifically to Buobe, we had to conduct need assessment to really consolidate the program and the needs of the target benefit so that they can better be realigned. Yeah, so one of the tools are those evaluation form that captures information that you want to hear from them, then how you want to help them. Then we follow it up with the short tailored meetings. We interact with them so that they better understand what the program is going to do to benefit them.
And how do you measure your program's success?
Our program success is we use quantifiable and qualitative result. How many number of people we have supported within a period of this year. Maybe if we have designed a program, how many people have benefited, that in terms of numbers. We also break down in terms of age. Are they within the age group? What could be the challenges? Like some programs you may prefer for young people. Maybe young people remain a bit jumpy and maybe they don't have time to stay on program that take their time. They always want to go and play and so on. So we measure this in terms of numbers. Then the other qualitative part is what is the change in somebody? You didn't have funds before. You were not able to make maybe you are not able to make a decision. Now, because of the training, because of the aspiration you had from your friends, now you can make a very well-informed decision for your life. You make decisions for yourself, not other people to make for you. And so you can freely live in the community, choose what you feel is okay for you, and you know what's right and what's not right for you.
So you do some evaluation with the people that participate to see what effect their participation has had.
Yeah, actually in all our programs, there is a baseline survey. It will not matter how we conduct the baseline survey to collect those data from the beginning. Then we compare it to what we shall get at the end of the program to see whether we have achieved this result or not. So those are the information we get, and we discuss amongst the members, and then we document so that it helps us to improve the program design.
And how do you incorporate feedback from program participants so that the program is responsive to their needs?
Yes. Now, when we have collected our evaluation form, for instance, we have a section whereby we ask you if you would like us to contact you. And if you so wish to be contacted and we have a concern that we feel we need more information, we give you a phone call. Because they are the community, we live with them, we also reach out there and try to create a casual talk and seek to understand how did you take up this, how why did you reach out to this point. Then after picking those information, for us as staff members, we come and sit down and get those feedback. We discuss, then it helps us improve how we next time go back to the community.
We'll be right back with our interviews. Now, I want to talk about the story of Esther, who is a key member of the Safe Plan organization, who works quietly in the background. She's a young mother with few opportunities in Miss Cindy to earn an income. In order to find a way to maintain a more steady inflow of funds to Safe Plan's organization and increase its sustainability, Safe Plan has come up with an ingenious way to accomplish a number of interconnected goals, including giving Esther a better life. Safe Plan found a local market for more environmentally friendly methods for cooking. They now make clay cook stoves that reduce the amount of charcoal needed by 70%, which is better for the environment and the health of the women who usually are responsible for cooking meals.
This is here is a production area for our cook stoves.
Wow, yeah. There's a lot of them.
Yeah, so we bring them, then this is where we pack them first. The lady, she's preparing to make the soil, to make mud for packing so it can come with the finished product like what we have seen there.
And are these for sale? These are going to be sold or?
Yeah, no. These ones, yeah. There is what we try we add the wires, we wrap them, we tie them with the wires. So to make it more firm and to be more durable, we put the wire, we wrap it with the wire so that even if it breaks, the wire can still hold it, then ready for sale.
We're told that in Kampala, women have dominated the market for making cook stoves, but there really aren't any women in Miss Cindy doing the same kind of work. Esther filled the need by becoming an expert in making these cook stoves using locally sourced mud and metal buckets. Esther sells these cook stoves in the local market, making some money for herself and also putting a percentage of the profit back into Safe Plan to sustain the organization.
So the beautiful part of it is that it consumes less charcoal, and even if you finish cooking, it remains hot. So your food remains warm, and you can still put other things like water. So it consumes less charcoal compared like to other metallic cook stoves.
In the future, Safe Plan hopes to expand new markets, creating a bigger profit stream that can help keep them afloat. It was great to witness firsthand the work that Esther does. She doesn't say much, but she clearly works really hard and knows what she's doing. From the looks of it, the sheer number of cook stoves they make, we probably saw close to about maybe 100 on the premises. The products sell really well. All right, we're going to return to our interviews. You're going to hear from Lindsay and Annette, Safe Plan's executive director, as they dive into the details of how Buwobe integrates savings groups into their co-op model.
So you mentioned the savings groups. Is that one way that you're mobilizing those resources that capital?
After realizing that limitation, then we introduced the saving group.
because we believe that they may not have a large sum of money to start the capital, to start the business, but through savings, little by little per week, the money can accumulate. Then maybe put a borrowing scheme, they can borrow, they start the business and share the costs of starting the business. It is very easy when you're in saving group to start a business, because we help you either to borrow money, and maybe as you save, your money is getting more. But it's hard, as someone has get trained now, to look for money to start a business in the short term. But when they are in saving groups, they save together, they borrow together, and find that they support each other to start their businesses.
And related, could you tell us more about the cooperative model that is Buobe and how that's helping the women with the access to market of their products?
Buobe is a cooperative bee farming. They do farming together. They do most of the activities together, production and other activities. Being also in the network of many other people, they produce their products and we help them in marketing, in packaging, and also in marketing their products. Their approach is that they are in the community, they work together, and the products being produced are for the benefit of the community. They start within themselves to market the products. Because if I'm in a member of Buobe and I've produced my candles, they are mosquito repellent, I've used them in my house and they are working. So that is a marketing strategy, to also to tell my neighbor about it, to tell my fellow woman about it. This is the product, we are marketing it together and it is working for us. Then also Safe Plan Uganda, we use other channels to help them market their produce, their products. We are in the networks, we always go out, we use many other channels like online platforms. We have the website, we put their products there. Of course, we use also the most common social medias, Facebook, WhatsApp, or publicize the boy products. But mostly, the members themselves are so much committed to ensure that if things work for themselves, they work for the better. Before Separan Uganda comes in, they have really done their part. They are putting more efforts in seeing that this product, the marketing is there, and they can access the markets, and they are contributing to access the markets of their products.
In 1 second, we're going to switch back to Daniel as we hear about what it's like being a prize winner. We're spending a bit of time on this topic because often it's difficult for small local organizations to compete for USAID funds. The standards that are required of an organization to receive USAID funds can be relatively onerous compared to US companies or other large NGOs that have more mature infrastructure. It's been a challenge for parts of USAID to find the right balance between safeguarding US taxpayer dollars, but also allowing local organizations to take the lead, which is the way we all want to see development happen. So, here's Lindsay and Daniel.
How did you feel when you found out that you were a winner of the prize?
We were very, very happy. We were the most happiest. But again, on the other hand, we became a bit naive because we were going to deal with a partner we have never dealt with. And all over, people were wondering, telling us, USAID is very strict. Yeah, how will you manage? We said, no, we are going to try. So we made a number of consultation meetings with fellow staff and collaborating with other partners who have managed similar grant or worked with the USAID to just garner experience and gain more kind of confidence, see that we ensure we develop a good relationship with the USAID as a partner in ensuring that we implement our program.
And how have you found the grant process now that you've been through it? Was it as complicated as you thought originally or not?
Not necessarily because we have won, but the grant process is really good because it takes you through steps. Sometime when they ask all information at once, it breaks us so much. But we would like grant partners to ask us some information, then we add. Even if we stop at a certain way, at least it helps us that we reached this level, but we were not able to reach the next stage.
Is there anything you wish you had known when you applied that you know now?
Yes, I wish we had known that we really need to set up very, very clear financial system. We wouldn't have had a lot of, again, going back to kind of re-clean up the process. If we had those systems in place already, it would make the work simpler the prototype we had, then the questionnaire, we keep on correcting so that we have the system set running.
What would you tell other youth-led organizations about applying for a prize?
Yeah, first of all, before they even apply, it would be good for them to prepare themselves, have basic systems in place, because however small the fund is, or in a small unit like a family, there's need for structures and systems in place to manage issues and the issues of money, things like that. So small organizations need to have structures first. They need to have hierarchy of leadership. They need to assign themselves roles, who is supposed to do what, at what level, and at what point do you come together to reinforce each other's effort. Sometimes it needs money, but it is what they're putting there so that when you get the funds, it can easily be implemented.
And that wraps up our episode on program design. We covered the Buobe cooperative business model, the use of needs assessments and evaluations, the integration of community participation and long-term sustainability, as well as what it's like working with USAID as a grantee and the operational challenges that come with that. Throughout these conversations, you can hear about how SafePlan has evolved in its way of working and how they use an iterative approach. There's continual incremental improvement along the way, which I think bodes well for the future success. Lindsay, was there anything else in particular that stood out to you?
Absolutely. I also was really impressed with the many ways that they are helping the women through the co-op. Being honest, programs have been introducing beehives to rural areas for decades now, but what makes SafePlan really unique is the extent to which they are providing technical training in other areas to make sure that these women are successful. They are helping with marketing and leading the charge with innovative ideas such as the herbal cough syrup. Daniel didn't mention this during our recording with him, but later he said that they are working with the university to come up with a special formula for this cough syrup. That is taking beekeeping to the next level.
In the next episode, we'll be talking more about partnerships and how SafePlan Uganda works with various stakeholders such as the local government, other donors, small NGOs, and the networks that they belong to further their leadership development. Remember, you can always learn more at the following websites, youthpower.org or educationlinks at www.edu-links.org. If you haven't already, remember to subscribe to this podcast in your favorite podcast app.